CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Ukraine crisis. The afternoon of February 27th, a Sunday in Berlin, at the Bundestag. What I understand now is a complete change of direction. Ostpolitik out, and in comes the unknown. So I welcome Stanley Pignal, the Brussels bureau chief for The Economist magazine, and the Charlemagne columnist. Charlemagne himself would be smiling, as he meant to unite Europe, and maybe it's happening. Stanley, a very good evening to you. If I understand correctly, the German word Wende has many uses. You apply particularly to that event, or those events, those speeches, at the Bundestag as Zeitenwende. What does that mean, Stanley? Good evening to you.
Good evening. A Wende is a watershed. It's a turning point. It's like the crossing of a Rubicon. And a Zeitenwende, which is the term that Olaf Scholz, the newest chancellor of Germany, used, is a sort of a shift in the times, a new epoch, a sort of meta change in which things feel fundamentally different. And that's, of course, the impact of the war in Ukraine, which is really forcing a wholesale rethink of post-war German politics, certainly post-reunification politics, where the role that Germany has traditionally played in Europe, a little bit shy, a little bit in the background, certainly underactive in things like defense, is going to have to change. This is a different world that Germany is entering, and it is seeking to respond to that.
The quote from Lenin seems appropriate at this moment, Stanley. Forgive me. There are decades where nothing happens, and there are weeks where decades happen. Is that what we just witnessed, not only in Germany, but in Europe? The peace project of the European Union and the assumption of no more war from 1945, is that gone?
Well, hopefully not. I agree with that quote. Whether or not Lenin said it or not, it's another question. But that's precisely the feeling, that a lot of stuff that we thought would unfold over the coming decades has accelerated. One big theme is the idea of a sovereign Europe, a Europe with strategic autonomy, which is a term that French President Emmanuel Macron has been using a lot, capable of assuring its own defense, standing on its own two feet. That felt like a project that was just getting started and that we expected the next two or three decades to be about, perhaps. Now it feels like it's hugely accelerated. That's an uncomfortable situation for Europe, actually. Having Germany kind of on the back foot in Europe as one voice among many, even though it is the biggest European country, it's the biggest European economy, that's always been quite a comfortable territory for Europe. Having a more assertive Germany that is soon going to have the biggest military, that needs to throw its weight around if Europe is going to have its role in the world, that's going to be new. It's going to require some adjusting to. And Europe adjusts, but it always adjusts slowly. And everything indicates that this is an adjustment that's going to happen rather fast.
A striking fact in your most recent presentation at The Economist is that Gerhard Schroeder, former chancellor of Germany, is denounced or is being denounced not only in the Bundestag but in the German media. What is the significance of that? And can you imagine this spreading to others who have trucked with Russia these last decades?
Well, Gerhard Schroeder trucked with Russia, one might say, when he was chancellor. He's a member of the SPD, the center-left party, which was always very keen on this Ostpolitik, this idea of dealing with Russia, of rapprochement with Russia, of hoping that having connections with them could promote mutual dependence and peace. That feels very naive now. Schroeder, after he left office, took rather a lot of money from Russian energy interests. He was shilling, for example, for this Nord Stream pipeline coming from Germany, from Russia to Germany, which critics say kind of puts Europe in hock to Russia. That used to be kind of softly denounced, kind of in hushed tones. Now it is very much something else. It's nearly like he's been doing business with an enemy of Germany. In fact, something rather extraordinary happened is that the staff in his taxpayer-funded office all suddenly quit this week. So much did they clearly feel that this was no longer, that Russia is no longer polite company to be working with.
We speak of blood and treasure when we speak of war, but let's focus on treasure. Germany's made decisions these last years about energy that now leave it vulnerable to spikes in prices, but also really an inability to plan for adequate resources unless there's lots of arrangements with allies, with friends, with traders. Is Germany ready to pay the price? Did Olaf Scholz speak of asking the people to endorse this?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that because we were speaking of Wende, and one of the previous Wendes in Germany was this Energiewende, which after the Fukushima nuclear disaster in Japan, Germany committed to closing all its nuclear stations. It now only has three left that are due to close by the end of the year. And that, unfortunately, has left it very much more dependent on imports of Russian gas. The idea, of course, is to replace that with renewables in time, but for now, it's very dependent on Russian gas. And that's why at the beginning of this crisis, Germany was quite reticent to impose the kinds of sanctions that America was talking about, that Britain was talking about, that France was talking about. But over the course of last week, it really shifted its position. And I think that's for the reasons that you indicate. The public pressure on politicians, not just in Germany, but beyond, has been really very notable. We saw very, very large protests last week across Europe, notably in Berlin. And I think that has given politicians that sense of license that, you know, yes, this may hurt. Yes, there will be a cost in terms of economic growth, in terms of companies maybe not having the energy that they need and so on, but that it's worth it. If it's a price you don't pay now, history has shown, if it's a price you don't pay now, it's a price that you pay tenfold later down the line.
I have been regarding what was coming out of Germany as a rearming of Germany, rearming of the German people. There is even, I've been told, talk of conscription. Is that accurate, Stanley? Rearming Germany? Because those words would alarm our 20th century forebears.
So Germany has always had this kind of pacifist streak since the Second World War, which partly translated in this idea that it didn't need to pull its weight when it came to collective defense. When you think about defense nowadays in Europe, it very much is as part of NATO. It very much is as part of the European Union. And there's been frustration amongst its allies, most notably America, most notably Donald Trump, but also presidents before him and after him, that Germany is a country that needs to be able to participate fully in operations, whether it be in Afghanistan or in other parts of the world. That is the kind of pacifism that is probably over in Germany. Now, it is going to take a long time to build the Russian army into something akin perhaps to the French army or the British army, which are the two militaries in Europe that can actually do things beyond their borders. But the plan is for that to happen. But still, I must emphasize, very much within the context of Europe, within the context of NATO. I'm really sensing no concern that the German army would become too powerful. If anything, the concern still remains that Germany won't do enough and Europe still won't have the defense capabilities that it needs to be autonomous.
So the earnest pacifism is still part of the conversation. But in this instance, it's to awaken all of NATO, not just Germany. Did Russia expect this? Can you measure that in Brussels? Is there a surprise that you hear from Moscow?
There's certainly, I think, surprise at the extent of the sanctions that have applied. Europe didn't cut off energy. There's still gas flowing from Russia to Europe. There's still oil potentially coming out of Russia. But it really did a whole lot of other things around sanctioning the central bank, around cutting some of the commercial banks from SWIFT, which is the kind of communication system the global financial system uses. And that is proving quite significant. It's put enormous pressure on the ruble. The stock market has been closed for 4 days now. But there's an indication that the companies are going to be worth very much less on the other side, Russian companies. And it does seem to be causing angst in the Kremlin. Now, nobody knows what Vladimir Putin himself is thinking. Nobody in Brussels know. I'm not even sure that people in Moscow know. But certainly some of his acolytes have complained publicly that this is an extremely aggressive response from Europe, considering the narrative in Russia, as you know, is that the operation in Ukraine is a minor military matter, whereas in fact what we know is that it's a very major land war happening on the edges of Europe.
Final thought. All politics are local is an American proverb. Annalena Baerbock is the foreign minister. She heads the Greens. The Greens are watching all of their work challenged. Are they accepting it? Is Annalena Baerbock speaking to the Greens?
The Greens, the world of the Greens is being challenged. That having been said, everybody's world is challenged in the current environment. The Greens can argue, hey, if we'd done this green transition, this renewables transition a lot earlier, we wouldn't be having this conversation about Russian gas to begin with. So yes, they're challenged, but they're not the only ones. And everybody is having to adapt their positions nowadays.
Stanley Pignol, the Brussels bureau chief for The Economist magazine and the Charlemagne columnist. Well, I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,